I found my way to was an Episcopal church, which is where I now worship and work. So that makes it a little bit weird for me to be here. On the one hand, I'm not a UU anymore, and on the other hand, this does feel something like coming home. On the one hand, I have a lot at stake in communities like this one, being the best communities that they can be. And on the other hand, I don't know how much I have to say to you about how to do that. What I can offer you this morning, I think, is a little bit of my own story, a bit of my own reflection on the path my life has taken, and hope that it can be useful to you. But we have to go a little ways back, because my UU story starts with my mother. Mom grew up in northeast Oklahoma in a little town called Ramona. She and her family attended the local Baptist church. Now, there are some great Baptist churches, some faithful and free ones, but this place, at least as my mother experienced it, was about social control. There was no drinking or dancing, certainly no sex. When she was 18, she graduated high school and spent the next year lacing boots in a factory that had a contract with the Air Force. She went to secretarial school at night and came east with $50 and the clothes on her back, where she worked her way up the secretarial pool in Washington until she ended up working in the White House and traveling the world. There was dancing. There was drinking. There was even sex. And there's one experience of hers in particular that I want to make sure to mention. My mother, who had never been outside the country, ended up meeting David on a flight to Paris. David was the first openly gay person Mom had ever met, and he and Mom became best friends. This was in 1970 or so, just toward the beginning of the modern movement for gay rights, but Mom and Dad were inseparable from that day until he died of AIDS in 1991, when I was 8. She hadn't been to church since she was a teenager. But when my sister and I were born, she wanted us to grow up with something. So she looked around, she toured church after church after church, and ended up in the local Unitarian Universalist Church there in Arlington. For my mother, it was important that she could choose what to believe, that she could make her own judgments about God. And she wanted those things for her children. I grew up in a household where choosing was my sovereign right. The thing that was great about our UU church was the same thing that was great about America, the freedom to choose. Now, I don't know if that story sounds familiar. I suspect for at least some of you, it does. My mother wasn't the only person to end up in a UU community because she felt stifled or constrained by the tradition she was raised in. That's how my mother told us that story, from oppression into freedom. What's unsaid, at least sometimes, is that not everyone has the same freedom to choose. I have cousins in Oklahoma who attend that same Baptist church. And we can ask the question in other ways, too. Last summer, my family, all of us are U.S. citizens, we went on a trip to Mexico, and when we got back, we decided we would just walk across the border. Our passports gave us that choice. But is that choice available to everyone? When I drive home to see my family in DC and stop to talk to you to find people on the way back to New York, what choices do I have about how fast to drive? Or about what I say to the cop that pulls me over? And does everyone have those same choices? In my job, in my church, I can meet privately with my boss. I can avoid harassment and abuse. And what I say will be believed. But is that true for everybody? As we've been seeing more and more clearly lately, it's not. So for 20-year-old UU me, it was an act of UU piety an act of making my search for truth and meaning a more responsible one, to notice what I could choose and what choices were not available to other people. I found that as a person decisively shaped by the white supremacy, the male supremacy, the straight supremacy of this society, that nothing I did could claim innocence. We don't have the time it would take to tell the full story of how I went from being a UU to being a Christian, but it starts there, with a growing awareness as a young adult of what I now call sin, of violence and racism, of economic and sexual exploitation, and of the ways in which it pervades everything, even me. Thinking through those things doesn't solve those big problems. But in a tradition that prizes our ability to choose, it was worth investigating why some people get choices other people don't. So the point is not that my path is one that anyone else should necessarily follow. The point is certainly not that anyone else should go out and become a Christian or an Episcopalian. We've got our own problems, God knows. And some of you probably know better than I. The point is that if we're serious about a responsible search for truth and meaning, if we're serious about the worth and dignity of every human being, if we're serious about our interconnectedness, and those are things my UU church taught me that I carry with me wherever I go, if we're serious about those things, then we have to be prepared to risk some things we value a lot. Because if we share a vision of a world in which Black lives matter, a world in which everyone has the resources they need, a world free from violence, harassment, and abuse, one in which the richness of every gender and sexuality can express itself as it will, even starting the conversations it takes to get us to that world may mean giving up some things we value, like the right to absolute self-determination. Now that is as funny for me to say as it may be for you to hear it. It feels a little bit like a betrayal of my mother, who left rural Oklahoma to determine her own course, and who worked at her job, and who volunteered at our church, until she died, so that her children could also choose. That story of going from constraint to freedom is the story we tell ourselves over and over about what has always made America great. And it's the same story I think we hear and tell ourselves about what has made UUism great. And I wonder if maybe the similarity between what makes America great and what makes Unitarian Universalism great should give us just a moment of pause. I remember a seminary classmate of mine, a Black woman, saying to me, "Your freedom isn't for me." The thing I recognize as freedom isn't for her, a Black woman. Not, "I'm not free." Not, "That freedom sounds great and I want some." But there's something wrong with your idea of freedom. What she meant is that my freedom to enter conversations on my own terms can be at the expense of other people's ability to have conversations on their terms. One thing I take away from her story is that we have to ask who our idea of freedom is for. The word freedom meant the freedom to own slaves before it meant the freedom for slaves. Your idea of freedom, my friend was saying, is about freedom of action, but not about who you're responsible to, about what you choose to do, but not about who those choices affect. And that was convicting for me, as a person who grew up thinking that freedom of choice in every part of life was not only my right as a human being, but an absolute good. and as her words have turned over and over again in my mind, what I begin to wonder is this. In the end, what can make our idea of freedom and the choices we ought to make different from the one peddled as making America great again? For those of us who share some version of that story, of escaping authority, have we lost our accountability to one another along the way? So we can and we should denounce the ideas that want to return us to times in which women and people of color had fewer choices, and neighborhoods and jobs were off limits to black people. We can and we should deplore deportations and mass incarceration. But what exactly makes the walls we build to guard our own autonomy that different from the ones we once planned for the southern border or from prison walls? So maybe the question now is not just whose authority can we get away from, but who else can we make ourselves accountable to? Who else can we be responsive and responsible to? Now, I don't want to pretend that this is always easy. There are times when being accountable to other people, listening to them, operating on the basis of being in this together with them, seems like an overwhelming and bitter burden. An infringement on our ability to, damn it, decide for ourselves. Everything in our politics, in our culture, tells us that a person's freedom and joy is found in escaping one another. That making ourselves great relies on drawing people out of the circle. If I buy myself the house with the high fence, if I keep the wrong people out of the country, if there is a business or a book or a building with my name on it, then I can finally be happy and free. If I can build a wall against my neighbor, or a theological wall against heretics, or a church wall like these four walls right here against people too different from me, then salvation can finally be mine. The truth is, there are lots of people we're not accountable to. Whether it's other people in our congregations, those on whose land our congregations are built, or those whose labor, paid and unpaid, makes our lives and livelihoods possible. My own mother's story, as we heard it growing up, is a version of that story too. That there were parts of her life, of church growing up, of the place where she came from, the people around her, that she needed to escape from. If I can finally have a church, she must have thought, where no one is telling me what to do, then I can be saved from hell. And hell really is other people. But I think, looking back at my mother's classic UU story, of escaping the authoritarianism of her Baptist church growing up and finding the freedom of her UU church, I think there is another way to tell that story. The choice of a UU church was only partially about escaping authority. I think it was also an act of accountability, of choosing to be in a place that would see her gay friend David as a full person. And that any community that wouldn't see that was not worth the investment she made of time and money and faith. She made his life, and not just her own, a central criterion for who she would be and how she would make her way in the world. For me, and this is just for me, an important part of my own journey into Christian life has been recognizing more and more the ways in which choosing to let other people choose is how I and the people I love get saved. But it's the values I learned in my UU church growing up that made me take that interconnectedness seriously. The seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism has driven me. And even though taking it seriously for me involves a deep dive into Christian life, I don't think anybody needs to be a Christian to take that seriously. As a husband, I'm deeply interconnected with my wife, Melissa. And as a parent, I'm deeply interconnected with my children, Simon and Oscar. And by taking vows of marriage and by accepting the responsibilities of parenthood, I have committed myself to limiting my own choices. I can't just move to a different city or take just any job or do whatever I want on a Saturday night, because the way in which those decisions affect Melissa and Simon and Oscar are really clear. But the UU seventh principle, the interconnectedness of all things, pushes me to extend the boundaries of those vows. This is not an abstract affirmation that we need each other. It's particular to each of us and where we are in the world. It's going to have a different shape here than it does for me living in Harlem. But for me, at least, it means that in my work for peace with justice, my desire to be the hero or the savior has to be constrained. It means as a white person following the lead of black people. It means as a man following the lead of women, as a straight person following the lead of gay and lesbian people. It means as a person who has never felt or experienced any disconnect between the sex assigned to me at birth and the gender I perceive myself to be. As a cisgender person, I have to follow the lead of my transgender comrades. Not just out of respect for them, but because there are parts of my freedom I can't get to without them. To honor that interconnectedness sometimes takes the form of giving up my right to choose. Giving up what I want to do in favor of what we do together. Being willing to live in the uncertainty of letting someone else take the lead. And though it may not sound like it at first, I think this is all really good news. It can sound very dour, but I think many of us have already experienced ways in which it's not. The ways in which I'm accountable to my partner or my children, the ways in which my mother was accountable to David, are not things that we experience as burdens, but as deep joys, as divinely given sources of delight. The ways in which we are accountable to our neighbors who are immigrants, our neighbors who are poor, our neighbors who are felons, who are Christian or Muslim or Republican or Democrat, even maybe our fellow members of this congregation who have different priorities and different hopes. Maybe accountability to them can be a great joy too. And to learn how to treat them as great joys, we can look to our relationships with our friends and partners and children that are already sources of both accountability and joy. My accountability to those I love the most. The kind where the circle of friends drawn together by both me and my partner is richer than either of our circles by itself. Where my children are more alive for all the difference and disagreement among his parents and many godparents. When worship is richer and freer and holier because it's not all just for me. When it's not about who we escape from, but who we let come with us, and who we let take us with them. When deciding together is more free and not less than simply getting my way. As a person who is no longer in the UU world, but loves it and cherishes what it gave to me, that is my hope for what Unitarian Universalist communities can be and can help me bring wherever I go. We can think of choosing as a thing we always do together. We can be committed to the choice we make together rather than what I myself would choose. And we can cram as many different people inside of we as we can. Because a new world is coming. And it depends not on what I do or what you do, or what they out there do, but on what we do together. And that is good news for Christians, for Unitarian Universalists, for Muslims and Jews, for Buddhists and Hindus, for those who proclaim the holy by whatever name or by none.